Okay, great. Well, hello and welcome to another teleseminar from Member Solutions. And my name is Ali Alberigo, as you know, and I'm honored to be here with you right now, right here. And I say the phrase right here, right now, because I'm never sure of when you're actually listening to this. You know, I have many people who email me or talk to me during my one-on-one consulting telling me that they love the teleseminars and the information that they get. So I thank you for your dedication towards taking your school to the next level. I'd like to start by talking about this election that we just had. No matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or you voted one way or the other or didn't vote at all, there are so many lessons to be learned from this political race. The first thing I'd like to say is that now that we have a new president, and it doesn't matter whether you voted for him or not, let's band together and make America great. And the president-elect's speech last night, he said some very profound things, and this is not from a single person's point of view. This is about the United States of America, and we're Americans, and there are some people that maybe aren't Americans that might listen to this call that are from other countries. But with that being said, you might be thinking, where am I going with this? And it's not about politics. This directly relates to your school, and it's very important to remember that you, as an owner or a staff member, have to remember all the things done within your school, whether it be marketing, sales, organization, teaching, seminars, etc. They're all geared toward the improvement of your school. And that's where I got that kind of, you know, example from our political race, that it's all about the country. It's not about individuals. And just like as a school owner, it's not about you as an instructor. It's about the student body and their benefits. And if your school is successful, you should be thinking about the family, the community within your school, and everything you do, you need to be thinking about whether that is going to benefit them. Now, I think that one of the things, as my mentor Tony Robbins has said, that it's about the spirit of CANI, C-A-N-I, constant and never-ending improvement. Every day that you have the chance to either go backwards or forwards. Oh, by the way, if you're standing still, you're technically going backwards because everybody moving is moving ahead of you. And if you don't agree with the philosophy of, standing still is moving backwards, then try it online at a grocery store or at an amusement park. Today's topic is, of course, is titled, How Do I Get It All Done? Or maybe that's a paraphrase of what it had said, but how do I get it all done? And as much as I'd like to sugarcoat this, I must be decisive and straight to the point on this one. Either you're going to do it or you aren't. It's like Yoda said in Star Wars, there is no try, it's either do or don't, or something to that effect. With that being said, if you have the motivation, then you'll be able to make strides, huge strides in your life. Before we go into the techniques used to accomplish these things, we must first talk a bit about human nature. Our minds are set up with an on and off switch. This on and off switch has a level of tolerance. When that level of tolerance is reached, we act in two ways. One, we either shut down or we react to the situation. Sometimes the mind behaves oddly because the reaction that we may have could be negative, therefore shutting down again or creating something dangerous. For example, just recently I read a book called The Unthinkable, When Disaster Strikes, written by Amanda Ripley. And I recommend this to everyone. Again, The Unthinkable, When Disaster Strikes by Amanda Ripley. The book was really amazing, and I recommend it to everyone, of course. The book basically covered the reaction of individuals who were in dangerous situations, such as the Twin Towers tragedy, plane crashes, hostage situations, floods, and so on. What amazed me was how the majority of people with no experience, no understanding of how to react, reacted in a negative way, literally frozen in time. They actually found, after going back to situations like a nightclub fire, that people had burned to death when an exit door was unlocked and easily accessible, but no one attempted to go there because the majority of the people were running in a different direction. In another situation under stress, if directed properly by someone who truly knew how to react in that experience, everyone in the tragedy was able to get out of the building without injury. My point being, with the proper training, practice, and experience, you can reprogram your mind to react differently as how you are to run your business and how you think. For example, today I received a fine from the township where one of my schools are stating that I'm running a business out of code. Mind you, I've owned the building and operated this business for 10 years within this township. They summoned me to court stating that I never, and I will repeat, never filed the proper application for a change of use or an assembly permit. The interesting thing is I have one in my hand. You know, I had one in my hand and from 2003 to 2005, and I attempted to get this certificate renewed many times, but I didn't get it done. I have to say it was a low priority on my top, my list of things to do, and eventually it slipped my mind. But the simple fact is that they have no record, period, and they're unorganized and lost my papers. Yet they're saying that I never filed it, which is not true, and I have a copy in my records. I have the proof, I have the actual certificate, so now I have to go to the town, waste my time, go to court, and prove this. This is all an annoyance, but it has to be done. And I have a choice. Let it keep me up at night, or be upset, or the way I train myself to think is to just look at it as another speed bump in life. Now let me give you the definition of what I think to be a speed bump. Most people, I believe, think that a speed bump was designed to annoy you. The actuality is a speed bump was designed to slow you down. But most people think that that's all it was designed for, when in reality it was designed to slow you down so that you will take notice of what's around you, R.E. like public schools, children's crossings, whatever. And I've witnessed people, and I'm sure you have as well, going around speed bumps in parking lots or just flying so fast over them that they do damage to their cars. But nevertheless, they didn't slow down and take notice. Now, this is interesting if you think about it in your business. I want to ease your mind by a bit by saying it's not always as easy as it sounds. And about 6 months ago, and I'll give you an example, I hired a young program manager who came to me with a reputable resume and a good amount of experience listed on that resume. I interviewed him three times, first once by myself, second one with the COO of my company, and then a third time with the COO and one of my staff members. I wanted to get a good feel, see how he reacted under the interview process and the pressure. And everything seemed to be great. He worked for about 5 months and really seemed to pick up quickly. In fact, the day I hired him, I was impressed because I gave him a pile of my DVDs from my Taking It to the Next Level consulting DVDs to my martial art curriculum and anything else I had, almost 15 hours worth of information. That very next day, I asked him how he liked the stuff. He came in and told me that he watched everything. The thing that I never questioned him on was whether he really did, and I didn't ask him any questions on the video. I just wanted to be impressed by him, saying, like, wow, he stepped up and he did it. The truth of the matter is that I think he didn't probably listen or watch all of them. He was just saying that to impress me. Anyway, as the months had gone on, I started to see little signs that he wasn't completing his job. My staff would come to me nicely and give me hints, but never sat me down and said, this is the way I see it. They didn't hold me accountable and let him know or let me know that he wasn't doing his job. I'm sure they felt that way, but if they weren't telling me, then I wasn't really hearing them. It wasn't enough to me. Really, I wasn't listening, but I had so much on my mind as my own excuse, and I let it slide. I continued to follow up on this individual, and the more and more I did it, I saw signs of things that weren't being done and things that he was getting caught up in the mini-truths. I want to say mini-truths, not lies, because that would be unfair, but he wasn't giving me the complete picture. He was saying what he had to say to get by and keep me happy, but I was not inspecting what I expected. Anyway, one day, out of the blue, he just didn't show up for work. No call, no email, no text message. And a week later, after worrying he was hurt, I had one of my police officers run a check on him, one of my students that's a police officer, and it turned out that he wasn't in the hospital, he wasn't arrested, so I realized that he had just quit. He didn't even have the decency to call me and tell me so, or maybe he was just too immature and didn't know how to deal with it. Either way, I took this as an opportunity to practice the constant, never-ending improvement, can I? Even though I'm the owner, I dug into the position of this program manager role, and I took it on myself. Some of you may be saying, what am I doing? I'm not practicing what I preach, but in reality I am, because, you know, I always say work on your business, not in your business, but this is how I see it. I want to take a long, hard look at the position of program manager and management and make it sleek, efficient, and easy to understand. Simply put, kind of like a cookie cutter kind of thing, where it's easily done by whoever I'd like to put in that position, of course. Now, there are many aspects that aren't cookie cutter mentality, but the reality is the systems are overwhelming They're time-consuming, and they're easy to push aside, and it's easy for you to fall behind unless you get into a routine. So by myself doing this, I wanted to simplify the systems, the routines, organize them, and prepare it so that I could take it and teach it and train someone else, the next candidate, to be better than I am at doing it. There are many things to do in a martial arts school, and I'm doing this from the idea that I'm the program manager now, and there's an instructor who teaches class. If you're a one-man show, and that means you're the cook, cleaner, and, you know, whatever, you need to think about this differently. You have to work harder and longer and become a master of efficiency and time management. But eventually, I hope you'll hire someone else. First off, the front desk and the program manager have many functions. There are three categories that involve this job. And write this down. One, student generation. Two, student retention and maintenance. That's one, student retention and maintenance. And the last is retail. Of course, these are all topic headings which have many categories beneath them, and I'm going to go into them in more detail in a few seconds. The program manager has to be a person who's a self-starter, someone who's great with people and highly organized. If one of those areas are lacking, then they're simply not the person for the job. Let me say that again. If they don't have these three qualities, one, being a self-starter, two, being great with people, and three, being highly organized, then they're not the person for the job. If you're a one-man show and you are bad at one of these areas, then you must find a way to get someone to do the things that you're not good at, or someone to do the job that has these three characteristics or qualities. Now, I'm not kidding. Don't ignore me on this. If you don't have these qualities, you'll be standing still, and you know standing still is going backwards, right? So let's reevaluate where you're at if you're a one-man show and look for the right people to help you. If not, you're going to have to do it all, and you're going to have to become great at these categories. Now, let me go into the first one. First is student generation. This involves anything to do with getting new students. People sometimes put this into two separate categories, but it's all under the same heading. You probably know it as marketing. What is marketing? Well, here are some examples. Anything to do with getting a non-participating person to recognize you have a product that you're selling and get them involved with what you're doing. So in this category, it could be flyers, handouts, direct mail, advertising on the print, radio, and television, whatever avenue you take. What is sometimes ignored in marketing is referrals. Word of mouth is probably going to be one of your number one areas of signups. So remember, superior quality and product is essential. Remember, people won't refer you unless you have superior product. Listen clearly on this one. If you're slightly unhappy, or they're slightly unhappy, your clients, or demotivated, you could jump through hoops of fire, and you still won't get a referral from them. On the other hand, if they're highly motivated, then they'll sing praise from the rooftops. Remember that this first important thing, student generation, should be one of the things that you spend most of your time on. Number two, student retention. This is also marketing, but from an inside-out point of view. Keeping good students happy will result in new students. And the environment within your school that sells new students. So, for example, a trial class comes in. Everyone is booming and happy and positive in your lobby. The students are booming, happy, and positive on the floor. That environment is going to create an easy sale. Most of the time, that new parent's going to be sitting there watching the class, and your existing happy parents are going to lean over and say, wow, this is the best thing I ever did. So make sure that you create this environment by giving superior quality service. The more you do to create an environment within your school which keeps clients happy, the easier it'll be to run your school and prosper. What do you do to go over the top to keep your clients happy? That's a question. You should write this down. What do you do? Or write down, what do I do to go over the top to keep my clients happy? Here's a simple way. Keep a notepad at your desk. Every time a client has a question, either write it down, handle it immediately, or if you can't handle it immediately, decide on a time frame to go back over the issue after it's either been solved or you've gotten more information, and then handle it. After you have that time frame, definitely at a later date, make sure that you follow up. There's nothing like getting back to someone and saying, I remember we spoke about such and such incident or question a week or so ago. I just wanted to make sure everything's been taken care of and that you're happy. If not, what can I do right now to make it better? Then make sure you do what you say or you'll lose trust and loyalty. Remember, communication is the key. The more you communicate your feelings and listen, you're going to be much better off. For example, I'm going to give you an idea. I received a call from a dad just yesterday stating that they were unhappy that their child hadn't received his belt. Now, I know you guys are going to say, go figure, right? That's never happened to you before. But anyway, I'm sure that, you know, we deal with this daily. But, well, anyway, in an attempt to tell me how he felt, he left a message on the voicemail. He said that they were considering other schools. He didn't want to talk to me directly, but asked me to call his wife. Anyway, I did, and I realized that it was my fault for not explaining to the parent what the process was ahead of time. Without going into this big, long, detailed explanation, I didn't explain to her what was needed before the child was to be promoted because he jumped from one of my smaller kids' programs to my bigger kid programs. Anyway, after we spoke for a few minutes, we decided to follow a certain set of procedures, and then we agreed to follow up within a week or two to make sure that they were happy. I then explained one thing that did bother me that her husband had said, and it was what I had felt that in a relationship that if I was to be held on this thin shoestring or walk on eggshells, that every time I made a mistake that they were going to jump ship, then I don't really think that we have a really good relationship and that we couldn't maintain this relationship any longer. I put a great deal of time into their child, and if one thing went wrong, I didn't want them to pick up and leave because that, to me, is the definition of a bad relationship. And she had agreed. I used the example of marriage. I said that if a husband and wife has problems and in that situation, one of them says that I'm considering other options, I'm talking to others and interviewing other prospects, and we may leave this relationship, or I may leave this relationship, then at that point the trust is gone and the relationship is doomed for failure. So what we needed to do, and which I think I had accomplished, and I'm hoping that I did, because sometimes people don't tell you actually how they feel truthfully, but I hope that by putting these plans in action, giving her, getting her choice of resolution, and then by setting a follow-up date to make sure she's happy, and for me to really pay attention to what's going on, I think I've satisfied her. Anyway, the last category, the third category, is retail. If you are good at what you do and have the product readily available, I find people are itching to take your advice and buy from you. If little Joey needs a jacket or fighting gear, why not make it your school jacket, and why not have that stuff on hand or get a process in effect where you can order it quickly and efficiently and get that product to them so that they don't get used to buying it from someone else? You have to be a professional in this department as well. Also, another comment is think like a customer. Ask yourself the question, is what you're selling appealing to the client? You need to ask them, the clients, what they need and what they want. Then make suggestions in that direction. Please go back and listen to my teleseminar. I believe it was called Retail Wonderland and the many articles I've written on retail. And then there's other things in the Member Solutions archives on retail as well with Paul Revlin from Red's Gear that's very powerful. Anyway, these topics are quite powerful. And let me give you an example. Just yesterday, I sold a mom whose child was cold sitting in our lobby, two pullover sweatshirts, two pairs of sweatpants, and a school winter jacket. And I wasn't like Crazy Alley from one of those TV commercials selling stuff and giving that sales pitch. All I did was quietly suggest the items and point them out on our rack. $190 later, boom, they're happy, leaving smiles on their face with all this new merchandise. Okay, let's move into the topic. Anything necessary, or everything necessary to running a school, I've put in my playbook. Now, if you can imagine a three-ring binder about 6 inches thick that a football coach uses to put all his plays in, I have one that I call the playbook on my front desk, and this is the Bible of what I do in my school. So I'm going to give you the areas and sections in the book so that you could put them in your book while you put it together, and I've found having multiple books creates confusion. So the more you have in one area, in one book, the easier for you to gather information, and make it habit. So I'll tell you what's in the book, then I'll open up for questions, but I wanted to first give you the idea of what we have. Now, you could write this down. The first section is trial classes. This is simply a section of files that have been labeled trial classes Monday through Saturday, or if you're open 7 days a week, Monday through Sunday. As a call comes in, I immediately set an appointment on our trial class waiver. Then I put it in the necessary day file so that I could call and remind this client 1 day ahead of time of their class. For example, they're coming in on Thursday. Today I'm going to call them to make sure they're going to make it in. If there's any struggles, I'm going to reschedule. But I have Monday through Saturday of all the classes so that I could talk to them and know who's coming in, be prepared with the names of the client when they walk through the door, shake their hand, et cetera, et cetera. The next section included in this trial class section is what I call hot miss trials. Now, there's another section called cold miss trials, but the hot miss trials are people who didn't show up. For example, they were scheduled for today. They don't show up today. I immediately take them out of today and put them in the hot trials because I want to call them, immediately call them to reschedule, and continue to follow up until I get in touch with them and reschedule them. The cold miss trials are for those that I haven't been able to get in touch with no matter how many times I called, and of course I treat these slightly different, but I'll call them and I'll slide the hot miss after, say, like 4 weeks of me making phone calls and sending periodic postcards. Then I slide them into the cold miss trial and I start a whole nother trickle marketing campaign, which may have postcards that say, buy 3 months, get 1 month free. Then I might send out a letter that says, get $100 off, or another letter that after that that says $150 off. And I do these mailers at a two-week interval, and I make periodic phone calls in between these mailers, and I have that section in there to remind me of what's going on a daily basis. I never go more than 2 or 3 days without looking or calling or following up on all of these hot leads, because after all, this is where our money has been spent in marketing and our energy to get these leads in the door. And if we don't follow up and continually trick it market and follow up and follow through, we're wasting our money. It's like taking a $100 bill and lighting it on fire or whatever your cost of advertising is, sometimes as high as $350. Now, this section now has another area, which is called follow-ups. And this is for people that you call that say, you know what, we thought we were going to come down, but we're really busy right now. Can you call me back in January? So I write down on really detailed notes that said, spoke to so-and-so on such and such a date. They told me they were very busy doing such and such an activity, and they asked me to call them back in January. And I might start mailing to them some flyers in December, then I make the phone call in January because I'm pre-framing them for the sale. This I basically call my courting process, the dating process from home plate to first base. The next section, section number two in my playbook, is my leads. This is all the leads that are untapped. They could have come from any source of our marketing. And check this out. In my school this year alone, we've generated 2,000 leads. 2,000 leads. When I thought we had a recession, I started to get caught up in the hype. You know, I saw that, you know, people weren't coming, my ads weren't working, and blah, blah, blah. And then I realized 2,000 leads. I'm just not doing my job at following up. The marketing is working. If I was doing better years ago, I was probably doing better at getting more leads and following up better. But anyway, I wanted to hit myself over the head with a brick, and that's no joke because I realize now that my advertising dollars are working. I need to put more energy into the closing of the sale, getting them into the trial, and that's what I'm doing. My staff was not following up and following through in this category. Anyway, you should take a long, hard look at your inquiries to see if you're actually getting a return on your advertising dollar, and then ask the question, are you following up properly, or at the very least, is your marketing bringing in the calls? And if they're bringing in the call, is it the quality lead phone call that you need? For example, if you advertise in a basement bargain newspaper and then realize that your prices don't fit the bargain mentality, maybe where your advertising is not working. So it's worth looking into. When I have my leads, these are blank leads that haven't been called. I call them on at least a daily basis, every other day, even if it's only 5 or 10 of them, and I cycle through this pile continuously until I get in touch with them and set up a trial class. I follow the same process if they've gotten a trial class and they hadn't showed up as we talked about before, but my goal is to get those trials scheduled and is to follow up on them and do whatever I have to do, and I put them into the same trickle marketing process. These leads are called daily, or like I said, every other day, and I cycle through the pile, and I do a minimum of 8 calls before I start this marketing campaign, and then I do a combination of marketing, email, phone calls, and hard mail with discounts and coupons and what I would call sweetening the pot. I suggest never quit unless people tell you to leave me alone and stop calling. I'm not interested. Other than that, think of everyone as a potential lead, because you never know. Mrs. Jones may have had a 5-year-old. That 5-year-old's not interested, but they have a 3-year-old. Now the 3-year-old wants karate. If you're on top of things and you keep mailing, those people are going to be your next client. Another section, section 3, is upgrades. This is something that's not followed up on, and sometimes, well, let me rephrase it. This is something that's not followed up on enough, and sometimes left out entirely in the cosmos. This is something that is directly tied into goal setting. For example, this month I may want to sign up 5, upgrade 5 people to my Black Belt Club, 5 people to my team leadership, 5 people to my elite program. Do I just set those goals and do nothing about it, or do we set those goals and have a process? We have to have a process for this category of upgrades. For example, you have a section in your binder, you pick out 5 names for, let's say, the Black Belt Club, and then your process is a personal phone call or visit when you see them in person, inviting them to your next Black Belt Club class, seminar, event, whatever it may be. If they accept or decline, you ask them whether they're interested. If they say no, you move on to the next client. But you still could sweeten the pot with this trickle marketing mentality, with some letters, maybe an email, maybe an invitation, a follow-up. And at that point, you start to get the point across that this is an event or a place that people want to be. You need a process, and it has to be in this one binder, because every month, every day, every week, you want to look at these set of processes. The next section, section number 4, is referrals. This is another category that goes untapped. Most people believe that the real success is having a referral program, but this is not absolutely true. You definitely, while the first step you definitely have to have is a formalized referral program, referral plan, and then you have to start marketing it. And again, you may ask, how do we market our referral program? And I'll say, just like you would market your school, flyers, emails, etc. Nothing is different, but it's most important that you keep a record of who has referred you and how well they're doing. For example, Mrs. Smith recommended me a lady, and their son joined our school. And, of course, as you know, if you want, without me going into detail, just so you know, in my school, if someone refers someone and they get that person and they join for the year, I give them $50 a gift, and they get a point, a credit, towards their year for free. If they get 5 people to join for the year, they get a year for free. Anyway, I'm on top of this. So let's say Mrs. Smith recommended someone, and I put them on an individual sheet. And again, I have a formalized process that I go through so that I can work with that one particular individual to get more referrals. For example, if someone in my school is giving me a name and that person joins, I'm going to now call them up and say, hey, Mrs. Jones, you have, or Mrs. Smith, whatever right name I used, you have 4 more to go. Is there anything that I could do? Do you have any more friends? Do you have any more people? And if they give you an answer like, I don't know, I'm not sure, that's when you break out all the information. Maybe the top 20 ways to refer a client, or letting them know that you do free birthday parties or free unbirthdays, which all these things I'm talking about I've written articles on, and they're in the archives. We can offer passes for the next party at your child's school or the next PTA function or possibly your son's team sport or Cub Scout meeting. You need to fill the client's head with options so that they don't feel that they've run into a dead end with referrals, and you nurture those referrals. After they get you another 1 or 2, you say, by the way, Mrs. Jones or Mrs. Smith, you have 2 more left. 2 more left. That's all you need to gain that year free. You need to always be on top of it if you want it to be effective. Most people will put the referral program out there, throw it up on the wall, talk about it in class, and expect people to be tripping over each other to give you names of referrals. I think it's essential for us to remember, you have to do this. You have to go out there and ask and nurture people and get them into what I call the referral culture. You need to build that referral culture in your school. Moving on, number five, again, this is sounding more and more overwhelming, I'm sure, to you, but remember, it's all in one binder so that you have it right at your front desk at the start of the day. You open it up and you look at it every day religiously with discipline. Make note, of course, now, make note, it's okay to slack here and there. But the difference from you, hopefully, and someone else is that you're highly disciplined, highly motivated, you want to be a success, and you'll do whatever it takes to get the job done. The next section I talk about is perfect attendance. This is something that we've found to be amazing for the motivation and retention in our school with our students. We have an entire process. I've talked about this on other archives as well. If you want, you can email me, of course, and I'll give you more information on this. And I won't go on, on and on for this, but if you have questions later, I can answer it. But it involves giving a certificate and a trophy for a person who has X amount of class and they have attended every class. And I love to have this done on the first few days of the month so that it's ready for the students when they walk through the door. It also helps me look at the attendance to motivate parents to stick to their classes. For example, if we have 12 classes as a total for perfect attendance and Mrs. Jones is up to 9 and they have a week left, I'm going to look at the card and remind Mrs. Jones, hey, Mrs. Jones, make those 3 classes so Johnny could get that perfect attendance award. And you know if Johnny's getting that certificate and they're getting that trophy, they're going to be highly motivated. And if they're highly motivated, the parents are highly motivated. So number 5 is perfect attendance reward system. 6, also in the binder, and it's another one that's of importance, is motivational postcards. This is a simple list of our entire database that I print out every month. It's also in the binder. Each instructor knows to go there, and they have a job to do X amount of motivational postcards per week. This takes the thought process and dumbs it down a bit. They just look in the book. At the end of the night, they see who's on the list, and they see who's been in their class, and they come up with one genuine, honest, motivational comment, and they write it on the card, write the name of the student, and leave it on the side. I stamp it, address it, and send it out. The instructor fills out the card and leaves it for me. I take care of the rest because it's not really their job to do all the paperwork and so on. If you have a program manager, that's going to be their job, or a secretary and so on. The comments are simple. Johnny, here's an example of a comment. Johnny, that was great how you answered the loudest in class today, or you stayed focused the entire day. I'm proud of you. That's all you need. That's all you need to get things done. We cycle through all active training students by the end of the month. In other words, we want to get to every single student. If I have 100 students, I'm going to divide it out based on my amount of instructors. And, of course, remember, try to be honest and don't seem too, contrived, simple general answers, general comments. So here's how it goes. If you have 100 students and 2 instructors, that's 50 students per instructor. That gives you 13 motivational postcards per week. That's it. If you do them by the day, that's not all that much, right? If you think about it, that's 2 to 3 a day. Takes no effort and only a few minutes per day. And this is up to you. You could do this quarterly if you wanted, but I recommend doing it on a more regular basis, on a monthly basis. But remember, it is going to send your retention, your motivation through the roof, and this is all in your program manager binder. 7, finally, as you know, and I preach this on my Taking It to the Next Level program, I preach it in seminars. I talk about it in my book, Martial Art Business 101. If you heard me talk about it before, I'm sorry, but I can't say it enough. It's the 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 week calls. Now, you have to make this a priority. If you don't, not only is it essential for your new students because you're educating them, keeping in touch with these periodic 2-week phone calls, but it's also great to keep in touch with your existing students, the longer training students. And this is simple. If you sign up 10 people per month, then week 1 you have 10, or week 2 you have 10, week 4 you have 20, week 6 you have 60, but if you break it down, of course, because they're joining at different intervals, you're not going to be doing all that many calls per week. Trust me, maybe 2 hours a week will get you done with all your 2, 4, 6 week calls. That's not that much. That's a half an hour a day, 4 days a week. Trust me, this will be the best time you've ever spent. what goes on during a 246-week call, this is the time when you answer and re-ask questions. Why did this person show up and sign up in your school? Are they seeing improvement? Are you seeing benefits? Are they seeing benefits? What would you like to achieve? What would they like to achieve? We take this time to pre-frame on future upgrades, special events, seminars, and so on. Also, it's essential to start educating people on that client referral culture, the process. And finally, at the end of every call, ask for a referral. Ask for one name. And if they're uncomfortable, tell them you're going to call them back in 2 weeks. And if they're happy with what you've been doing, can they please give you a name? Don't take no for an answer. And remember, follow up and follow through. Closing up on these seven categories in your playbook, it's important to remember that self-discipline is only developed if you work at it. I have a saying which I tell to my students continuously. It says, truly knowing is being able to perform at a subconscious level without thought. I said it last month as well. You have to work hard every day to make your processes, your systems, have it. You need to make them a top priority. Once it becomes a part of your DNA of who you are as a program manager or as an owner or it becomes a part of the DNA of your program manager, then as they get used to it, it becomes less and less overwhelming. Remember, it's all about pushing the comfort zone. If you hold your hands together and make a circle, that could be your comfort zone. It's not about stepping out of your comfort zone. Only certain people enjoy doing that. But it's about expanding your comfort zone by putting new things into that comfort zone until it grows, and then grow it and grow it and grow it and grow it so that your comfort zone is huge. Remember, the more you do in one day, the less you have to do on other days as well. So if you work really hard on 2-3 nights a week, the other days could be your light days. You don't have to overwhelm yourself and work yourself to the bone. Remember, work smart, not hard, but work hard and work smart. But don't just work hard. What I found, and I want to share this with you, is the theory of analysis paralysis. And then we're going to get to questions in a minute. We tend to get paralyzed in indecision. In other words, we're so caught up in the little things, we never get started or get anything done. Then there's a phenomenon that happens called life. This is what I call the law of inundation. The law of inundation is where we drown ourselves in the activities and we get so caught up that we're frozen in time and we lose sight because we're too much in the moment, that one individual moment without the big picture. Now, don't forget now, the martial art business, we're frozen in time. And remember, standing still is like going backwards. So I want to help you think a bit out of the box. I do want to ask you to think small, but not small like you're used to thinking, because you've heard me always say think big, you know, strive for big things. And, you know, I believe all good consultants and successful coaches and school owners will say think big. Set your goals high. Achieve greatness. But I'm not talking about those things. I'm talking about the small things in respect. What I'm saying is, and I'm asking you to do, is look at the small things and accomplish those small things, because in the end, you're going to have huge growth. Don't market. Don't act. Don't think like the big boys, like IBM, Mac, Home Depot, all these big, large martial arts schools. Think small. If you were to advertise like IBM, McDonald's, Mac, Home Depot, you'd probably have millions of dollars behind the marketing machine. And if you did, you'd probably have too many people that you couldn't handle, and they'd be in the door and out the door with this kind of marketing campaign. The real secret to growth, and I hope you're listening, of course, is service and professionalism. If your product is amazing and you have your systems in place, then it's simple math. If you lose a few students, you're going to gain them back. Remember, you don't want to have the mentality that you're bringing people in droves and they're leaving out the back door and, yeah, you know, it's this complete cycle and you end up standing still. I want you to slowly tweak your processes, 10% on retention, 10% on the sign-up ratio, 10% on retail. And in the long run, it's not going to be 30% in the end, because that 10% is going to be amateurized over a long period of time. So your 10% improvement in one specific category is going to bring you more 40, 50, 60, 70% in the long run. Now, before I continue to close up, I want to give you some ideas on what the school is and how easy it is to run a professional and profitable school. I wanted to open this up because, man, I've been talking for 44 minutes without stopping. So, Kathy, if we could open this up and answer some questions, Then I'll go back and I'll do my close up. But I didn't want to cut too much time out. So do we have questions on there?
Yesterday, because he's not supposed to be here.
I just opened up the phone line, so I'm not sure if anybody on the phone has a question for Allie.
And we could hear you talking, so make sure if you don't, you're on mute, so we don't hear your background noise. But I'm available if anyone has a question on the topics I talked about. Anything at all? Okay. How about Kathy online? Anything at all? Any online questions?
There's no online questions at this moment.
Okay. Well, rather than wasting time, because sometimes I think of that as everyone is getting what they want out of this call, so I'm happy about that. I'll just go back into my last few parts of this topic, and then we'll ask one more time towards the end. So remember, if you are a school owner and you're thinking with the small things in mind, you remember, like, don't sweat the small stuff, it's all small stuff. Well, sweat the small stuff, because that small stuff is going to turn into big stuff. Now, think about this. If you ignore a problem or an issue, you know as well as I do, if it goes long enough, the issue becomes huge. If you take care of it, nip it in the bud, you will end it and move forward. Now, the small stuff are the important things, like this simple little program manager book. Right now, I know that most people out there are saying, like, wow, there's just so much to do. And you're right, this is not an easy business if you're going to run it professionally. But if you get these seven systems down pat, and you're on it, your clients are going to look at you as like you're superhuman, that your school is of the ultimate professional level, that you're the best. They're not going to want to go somewhere else. And you know what? It's important to follow up and follow through on all these little things and do it on a regular basis, and you're going to see that your school is going to grow by leaps and bounds. Now, I wanted to give you a picture. Imagine this. A school with as little as 70 students can make a substantial amount of money. Here are some quick numbers. If you have 70 students and you're doing things right and you're charging at $130 a month, that's $9,100 a month, just in tuition alone, that's $109,200 per year. Then add in retail sales and, let's say, drink sales and, you know, gear and so on. If just only $1,000 a month, that's another $12,000 a year, bringing your total up to $121,000 a year. Now let's add on some kick butt special events six times per year. One weekend, one day, 3 or 4 hours out of the year, not a lot of time, 6 times 3 hours of your life, that's 18 hours, and you gross another $1,000 per event. And you know as well as I do, most of the time that's almost pure profit because you have pizza and little things or whatever you're doing. So that's another $12,000 a year, bringing you up to $133,000. When I talk about this in simple terms, some of you may be saying, wow, it's not that far off. It's not that difficult. But sometimes some of us have 250, 300 students and we're not even making that kind of money because we're not looking at the small things. We're not auditing our processes. We're not seeing that we've done too many pay and falls. We're not seeing that we're charging too little for this family package. Or we're not seeing that our marketing is not really working efficiently, or we're not doing our retail efficiently enough. We're not doing our special events professionally enough to get the amount of people in, and we're not setting goals on a regular basis. Now, when I said $133,000 a year for 70 students, that's pretty awesome. And the good thing is that you could run a school like that on only 17 hours per week. 17 hours per week, that's not a lot. That's like living a vacation. I put in at least 10 to 11 or 12 hours a day, and I've been doing this for 18 years. So if I was putting in a 12-hour day, someone who's doing a 17-hour work week, 17 hours now of teaching classes, I have to say, 17 hours of teaching classes, you might have to do another, I don't know, 2 or 3 hours a day of administration, program managerial stuff, et cetera, so that's 3 times 6, 18 plus 17, that's a total of 35 hours a week. That's easy. Now, I didn't add in expenses because I don't know what your overhead is, but let's just say on, you know, in some schools it's $40,000. That includes all your expenses, rent, insurance, phone, internet, et cetera, et cetera. Think about it. You're making $93,000 per year. Pretty darn good. I think that's amazing, and I think you have to look at your numbers in small scale, and, of course, that small scale becomes a very large thing. I also want to offer a great idea to you, and if you're interested in emailing me, I'd be happy to work with you. I have what I call our 20 top referral tips, or the 20 tips to getting a referral. If you email me, I'll send those to you, free, of course, as part of your consulting with Member Solutions. And also, I'd want to offer to you, and there are great consultants out there like Kathy and myself and so many other people that could do one-on-one calls with you. But I want you to think with goals. I want you to think with that focus that you're going to get one thing and get it done and then move on and keep on building that process and that self-discipline to get things done on a regular basis. And I think if you do that, you'll be amazed at how efficient you become and how much time you start to have that is becoming spare time, where you could spend time with your family, take vacations, read a book, relax, do whatever you like to do. But sometimes we're so caught up in the moment, in that analysis paralysis, that we really don't get what we need done because we're frozen in time, like in that book, The Unthinkable. Anyway, Kathy, I'm going to say any more questions, and then I'll do my close-up because I just ran with it real quickly on this one, and we'll get done. So
you do have questions on mine now.
Take that. Good. Okay, what are they?
Okay, first one, let's see. Sean from Los Angeles says, hey, Allie, I really enjoy everything that you're going over. What do you do if a referral leaves early and does not complete a full year? Perhaps they move. Do you still give credit for that referral?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, they moved. I mean, you could give them, like, you know, you could send them a gift or something nice, but small, you know. They're no longer affiliated to with your school, so, you know, I would do something nice. And, you know, karma is all about doing the right thing. But, you know, once they're not in the referral process, that program, there's no sense in giving them, you know, anything really financially if they're not around. That's my answer. You may want to maybe send them something, maybe a T-shirt, or, you know, if you're giving $50 out and they did get you the referral, then send them that $50. But I wouldn't, like, keep giving it towards a free year so that they get the coupon and then they give it to someone else. Really, it's all about them being involved and still engaged in your school. I hope that answers that question.
Okay, I think so. Joe from Franklin Square, New York, is saying, Kiyoshi, do your own retention, attrition logs, or does your program manager do it? And the second part of that is, how many hours a week does your program manager work? And the third part is, do you have more than one office worker to support the program manager?
Okay, let's do one question at a time. So the first one was, do I do it myself?
Yeah, right. Well, do you have a program manager that does it with attrition logs, or do you do it yourself?
Okay, well, right now, at this moment in time in my West Islip school, which is my headquarters school, where the program manager left and I decided I really wanted to refine this position, I'm doing as much as I can myself. Now, that's not what my plans are for the future. I don't plan on doing this for more than maybe another month and then hiring a program manager and training them and working with them really hands-on for about a month or two, you know, where I'm going to follow them and watch them and mentor them and they're going to mirror me, et cetera, et cetera. So they're going to be doing all of that stuff and they're just going to present it to me and I'm going to just go back there and look at that book and I'll be able to see clearly what's being done if a form's not being filled out properly. And these, again, by the way, with that old program manager were all telltale signs when I go back and there was a trial class that came in and he didn't fill it out and he always said, oh, I'll fill it out tomorrow. And I realized that they were just bad habits and I was trying to get him to break it, but he was not willing. So my answer is your program manager should do all that for you and they should present you with the numbers and the facts so that you can, you know, go over them and look at them as the owner of the school. What's the second portion of the question?
How many hours a week does your program manager work?
My program managers that work in my Lindenhurst school, my East Islip school, my Port Jeff school are all full-time, about 32 to 38 hours per week. And they're working on all of these projects and other things as well. So that,
okay.
I hope that answers the question.
Okay, sure. It definitely does. And do you have more than one office worker that supports the program manager? Or are they kind of on their own? Or?
Well, I've done this a few ways. I'll give you two of the scenarios. One in my headquarters school here, we used to have three or four people that were like portions of program manager sections. In other words, each one of them had a function, and put together, if we put them in a melting pot, they would have all become a program manager. I don't recommend that. I really don't. You know, you might want someone to do administrative work, and they do all the contract entering and secretarial kind of stuff. But if you have a good program manager, they could do all of that. And if you're organized and they're organized, it's a piece of cake. It's, you know, it's not going to be overwhelming where they feel like they just got too much on their plate. They'll be able to get the job done efficiently without any stress whatsoever. So I would say one program manager that runs the office, does all the upgrades, does all the sales, does all the communication. They're your intelligence in your lobby. They're the ones that are listening in on what communications are going on. If someone seems a little unhappy or if Mrs. Smith is having a bad day, they're the schmoozer, they're the salesperson, they're the friend, and they're there to keep the school in order. They're communicating with the instructors, letting them know that Mrs. Jones is having a struggle with Christopher not doing his homework, et cetera, et cetera. The program manager, if done properly, is probably almost as important as the instructor teaching the classes. That's my opinion. And I believe that wholeheartedly because a good program manager controls the entire organization, the school. So that's my answer. And I'm sticking to it.
And you're sticking to it. All right. There's one more. It's not really a question. It's more like a comment. It just says, no questions on this topic, Allie. You've done a good job of restating all that you've talked about before as far as systems. These are great ideas. I wish I could somehow impress upon my staff that ideas are only as good as implementation. Ideas are like technique. If you don't know how to close distance, then the technique is useless unless the opponent comes to you. So that's a comment for you.
Well, that comment is excellent, but I disagree. And let me tell you why. I'm not trying to cause, you know, trouble or be negative, but I have found, and Kathy and I have just did a trip in, we met with Joe Gallia, and we had some great time to talk, and really it's all about what we do as the individual. Like, you know, I'm the consultant or I'm the owner of the school, and I know that sometimes I'll say to my staff, do this and do that, and if they don't do it, I shake my head, and sometimes I'll do it myself because it's easier to do things yourself than follow up and follow through. But what we're doing, it's almost like as if we taught a technique to a student and they didn't get it right and I got over there and I moved their arms and made them block, and then every time they got into a fight, I'd have to be there to make them block. What I need to do is train them efficiently and educate them, and most importantly, start to develop their standards within their job responsibility. And that is also a martial art lesson as well for all of us that are listening, is that we need to establish standards within our school. What I mean about standards is that we have to educate our student, educate our parent, educate our staff on what we believe to be the standard. The standard meaning, like, for example, if I teach a student a horse stance and I show them that my horse stance has to be deep and low and strong and straight and quality, and they do it sloppily and I allow it, I'm creating a different standard. But if I don't allow that standard of their sloppy horse stance to be accepted in my school, then the standards overall are going to grow. And everyone is going to look at a horse stance only to be done the way that I taught it, low, deep, strong, et cetera, et cetera. If my staff realize and I tell them that it's so important to fill out the book, again, my fault, I admit to it, with this old program manager, I allowed him to slack on certain things, and I would tell him, and he'd give me a song and a dance, and I'd say, okay, he'll eventually learn. But you know what? I got better, because I might have waited a year or two in the past. Now, it only took me 6 months to get rid of this guy, and the next one is going to be done in 2 months, because if they're not following my procedures to the letter, then I'm going to make sure that I put in a retraining program and try to retrain them, and then give them procedures to follow and a follow-up time period that I'll say, such and such an staff member, I noticed that you're doing it this way. I wanted you to do it the way I taught you, and you have to have it the way I taught you within 2 weeks. We're going to follow up in 2 weeks. I'm going to make sure that everything is done the way I asked in 2 weeks, and if not, I give them a written warning. And a few, maybe one or two written warnings, I have to be ready to fire them and let them go and hire someone else. Because, you know, bottom line is, no one cares about our livelihood and our business and our school and our students more than we do. And if people are not going to live up to the standards that we believe in, then heck, we got to get rid of them, because they're an infection within our schools. They're a sickness and a disease that will eventually create waves and ripples beyond our belief if we don't cut it and cut it quick. That's the way I look at it. So the comment was awesome, but of course you see that it's important for us to make sure that we train and inspect what we expect and hold people accountable. And if we don't, literally we're training them to be able to do whatever they want. We're giving the impression, if we ask people for referrals and they say, okay, I'll give them to you next week, and then we don't call them back, they just say, hey, he's not following up. If we say that we're going to punish and we don't punish, we don't put a kid in timeout, we just threaten, they get wise to that, and they just keep on doing what they want because they know we're never going to follow up and follow through. Same thing goes for employees. Same thing goes for anything that we do. So we have to make sure that we live up to our standards. Any last questions?
No, I believe that was the last one.
Okay. Anyone online that has a question? Okay. I just want to say thank you, guys. Before I leave, and I hope I don't get smacked for this, Kathy, is that I wanted to offer everyone a really great idea. If you're interested in finding, because the holidays are coming, but even not in the holidays, and you want to find a great gift for your staff, and you probably are kind of smiling, Kathy, you kind of almost know where I'm going with this, is that I highly suggest my new book, Martial Art Business 101. And I think it's a cool idea, because what better way to invest your money in a gift and get a return on it? Normally, gifts just get thrown out. You buy them a gift certificate, you send them somewhere, but it never comes back to you other than, you know, goodwill and you know, all that. But if you get them a book, or you get them a video, or you get them into a program, they're going to become better staff members, they're going to be better, and they're going to grow your business. So I highly suggest my book, Martial Art Business 101, Who Ya Living the Dream. It retails at $39.99. And if you buy more than three for your staff members, I'll give you 20% off. And this holiday season or any time of year, find a gift that's going to give you a return on your investment. Train your staff, and the rewards are going to be unbelievable. So email me, too, for any questions at Renshi, R-E-N-S-H-I-L-I, like Long Island, ninja, at AOL.com. And I'd love to work with you. And please get on some one-on-one calls with all of our incredible consultants. And I look forward to talking to you guys soon and next month. And, Kathy, thanks for being such an awesome moderator and a help. And, everybody, I hope you enjoyed the call. Have a great day.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks, everybody.
Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.